Let's have the discussion. You're listening to Canter with Scott and Paul.
Welcome to Canter. Today we've got Matt Shales joining us. Matt's a local hemp farmer here in Perth. Matt, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
Tell us a bit about yourself, Matt. What do you do?
So I've got three things going on at the moment. We've got a company called Hemp Brothers that's involved with supplying hemp pet products. We've got Medican Health, which is involved in the medicinal cannabis side of things. And we've got a hemp farm as well, so involved in the cultivation and growing of hemp.
Yeah, so you've bitten off a lot. It's a lot of stuff to get through. How busy is your week each week?
It's very busy.
Hectic.
But it's it doesn't feel like work, to be honest. It's just enjoying each and every minute of all my days. So it's doing what I love doing every day.
Very cool. So it's a common theme with some of the people we've spoken to that they don't feel like they're working these days. They're involved in something they're passionate in. They're doing something they love, and all of a sudden they don't care how many hours they do. I think we were speaking to a bloke called Yauke from Dutch Passion last week, and I asked him, are you this guy that can't switch off? You're always working. And he said, yeah, like his phone is going 24/7, but he doesn't mind. It's not work. He loves it.
Yeah, exactly right. That's the thing. I'll have a conference call at 6 a.m. with some people and then have another one at 9 p.m. that night in Canada, and it just doesn't feel – if I was digging holes for that many hours a day, I wouldn't be enjoying it. But it's a bit of a different feeling, so I know I've found my passion.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
So what's your – okay, so you said you've got the medicinal cannabis company, you've got the Hemp Bros company dealing in pet nutraceuticals, you're also a hemp farmer. Is there one that you lean to as your favourite?
Well, the favourite, they're all my favourites, but the core business is Medican Health.
Yes.
So that focuses on manufacturing and supplying medicinal cannabis products to Australian patients. The big focus here for me is providing affordable medicines and also ones that have a bit of actual thought and science put into it about the cannabinoids and terpene profiles. So that's my main focus. In terms of enjoyment at the moment, that's a lot of paperwork. So the hemp farming is probably my
cool.
The most enjoyed. I get to grow.
So you've
the
got
plants.
A green thumb. You've got a. If you can tell the listeners what's your background, schooling background, you've done some marine biology.
Yeah, so I've did a marine biology degree. Never really used it as such. Became a commercial diver after that. I think that was more my interest, just being in the water with the animals, and then. I left the diving job after just a string of shoulder reconstructions and the body just fell apart. So probably from about 3 or 4 years ago, started putting a lot more of my time into the cannabis and hemp industry and, turning it into a passion, into a career.
You mentioned with Medican you wanted to make access more affordable. We had a guest that is a cancer sufferer. She has been on the special access scheme in the early days of legalization, medical legalization. And we discussed in depth issues with affordability and accessibility. What are your thoughts on the current position of accessibility and affordability in the industry?
Accessibility is becoming easier. I think the biggest issue is really education around the doctors thinking it's harder than it is.
Yes.
For example, here in WA, any GP can prescribe it. I just sat with a GP last week and walked him through the process. The actual application was 5 minutes. Depending on the follow-up questions, we'll see how that actually goes.
So it's not a mountain of paperwork that you get told?
Not the initial application. There can be lots of follow-up questions. It depends just how strong your case is. Yep. If it's a straightforward case where it's chronic pain, the patient's been on a library of different medicines and they haven't worked.
So then if like a stoner goes in there and trying to get medicinal cannabis or whatever, it's going to be a lot more difficult for them kind of thing.
If they've tried other medicines, it should be fine. If they've got any kind of history saying they've got an issue of chronic, there's a long list now. It's not just life-threatening conditions.
Yes, okay.
But you can also look at certain things and use a symptom of that condition mm-hmm. as the prescribing matter or the indication. So, you know, even if it's, just say motor neuron or something like that, that they might not want to prescribe for, you can say it's for chronic pain associated with that. So it's, but again, it's about educating the actual process. The applications now, you send it in, you can get a response within a day or two.
Wow. Okay.
And then the patient can take that script to the pharmacy and get the product the very next day.
We've heard from people on the East Coast that they feel that this is a last resort medication with prescribing.
So there is different states have different rules.
Sure.
And again, I have heard that as well. It's going to be the last case scenario. And that's what they say. You've just got to have tried something else.
Yeah.
But again, on paper, they say this.
Doesn't line up like that.
I've heard a lot of doctors say, they do spin out to say that they don't want to try all the medicines.
Yeah.
Because they do have listed side effects they don't want to risk.
Yeah.
So it's really a matter of just trying first, finding the GP that's willing to give it a go more than the 10-minute consult and go from there. We're hoping to also potentially in the future open up some clinics that aren't charging an arm and leg just to walk through the door and do the application, ideally, because it's something accessibility, I guess cost is a part of that.
Absolutely.
That's the prohibitive bit. It is
getting
the medicine's expensive and then the medicine itself can be expensive.
Well, I think Liz was telling us her first script to get possession of that first script cost her $800.
Mm-hmm. That was just the initial consultation.
Initial consultations
was like
and then 500. A prescription and medication, I believe. It took months.
Mm-hmm.
The process.
How many years ago was this?
This is probably 2 years ago because she's since reverted to the black market. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is people that have tried the special access scheme early in legalization that have since reverted back to the black market, do you feel that it's more of an embracing environment for them to come back to the legal framework?
Definitely, yeah. The 2 years ago, it was near impossible. It was a nightmare. It was months and months and months because it was all new to the regulators. They didn't know really what they were regulating, I guess. Now the system's working. They see it's just a checklist. Yep, chronic pain, that's a condition, tick. Yep, I've tried other medicines, tick. Yes, this product that I've picked is actually one that's able to be prescribed. And then away you go, really. It's
What about fears? People have fears, people that have always lived their whole lives demonising this substance, this plant. People that are fearful of it, can you allay some of those fears with maybe your own experiences in terms of lack of serious negative side effects when they consume this?
Yeah, the biggest thing of majority of all other medicines you'll see on the shelves, they can cause death.
Yeah.
Even you have too many Panadol, mm-hmm. you can die. Cannabis, you cannot have a lethal overdose, and it's purely down to the fact that we don't have cannabinoid receptors in the part of the brain that control our breathing.
Uh-huh.
So you have opioid receptors there. You have too many opioids that interacts that area. We do not breathe, we die.
Mm-hmm.
That can't happen with cannabis. So, but even before that, obviously death is a pretty bad side effect, but just this people being scared of being high, it mm-hmm. I don't understand it because you've got these same people walking around.
On opiates?
On all these other painkillers, et cetera, that I assume they're high. Yeah, I don't take any of those things, to be honest. My shoulder recons, all those things I've had, I never took a single painkiller. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to be involved in that side of things and the addictive nature of it all.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it's a hard one because it's been so demonized and they've done such a good job at scaring everyone about mm-hmm. this plant that, I mean, some of the things we believe are just outrageous.
Yeah.
Someone once told me, oh, no, cannabis is worse because the smoke is hotter and it burns your brain. And So I didn't realize our lungs are in our brain, but it's but these are the things then we just believe.
Yeah.
I could go on about this for hours about this side
true.
Of it all.
It's
but,
a deep topic.
It's a hard one. And definitely even with the doctors, they always say we want the evidence that's safe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand, okay, they want evidence. I agree with all that. But with all the other medications they prescribe, they've got the evidence that it kills people
mm-hmm.
and that hasn't stopped them.
Can cause psychosis, a lot of these substances.
Yeah, it causes organ failure, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand them saying we would need to make sure it's safe. because these other medicines aren't safe.
That they're actively prescribing and are saying...
We've proven to them that you die if you have too many, and that's okay with them. So I just don't quite get it. And people who have abused cannabis to the nth degree, definitely with these dabs going on now, and they're still walking around. It's, you know, but look, I do understand. My own brother's a surgeon. I mean, I'm still convincing him, but I understand that we've been taught a certain thing for a long time now, and we can't just click our fingers and change their viewpoint. So we've got to do it the right way, do these seminars that we do around Australia with a charity called Medicinal Cannabis Research Australia, and we do, training of doctors and training or teaching, educating just patients as well.
Very cool. Very cool. So you... It's amazing for me to see someone that's got great medical knowledge whilst not being a doctor. You seem to understand a fair bit of the physiology involved and things like this. But you're also a farmer.
A new farmer.
You're learning your way with the hemp side of things.
Yes, no, the farming side. So it was my uncle's chicken farm.
Yeah.
And luckily he's just allowed us to use the land. Mm-hmm. Everything I do is on a very, very small budget. So I've just been very lucky about how it's all fallen into place so far. Mm-hmm. So we've had land there to be able to grow a little trial crop. Mm-hmm. My vision with that is to actually convert the chicken sheds into grow rooms. That would be great one day, but take it one step at a time. Yeah. So, yeah, we've started just done our first harvest in the last 2 weeks.
Congratulations.
Was it?
I saw some imagery and it looked fantastic.
It was a dream come true walking through the dream was walking through a field of hemp / cannabis and I achieved that. And then now having just this shed full of it, it was that was perfect. It smelled amazing.
What was the process to find the strain of hemp that you're using? Because I know there's legalities of how much THC and how much CBD you're allowed in the hemp. So what was the process in that?
So the rules in it varies as well. So in WA, it's 1% THC or less is considered hemp. Obviously in America here it's 0.3. I believe in the EU it's 0.2. Mm-hmm. So we're quite lucky there. 1% allows us to play a little bit more in that.
Okay.
It's an interesting area that as well anyway about the way they actually test for that. We can talk about that after, but the process of finding the actual seeds. For starters, it was purely just a trial. So I've actually volunteered at a farm down south last year and actually used a variety that they grew called King G. This one, the reason I grew this, it just had amazing terpene profile and it grew huge monster plants. So I just wanted to first.
They look very bushy, didn't they? They
were big, yeah.
I was surprised when I saw...
Instead of the usual straggly stuff.
Yeah, I thought, wow, that's well, productive hemp.
It all comes down to the spacing. So this is what we're trialling. We did different... we just kept it simple. Instead of worrying about doing all different strains, different fertiliser types, et cetera, we just did density differences. So we did one bay where it just had your typical seeds everywhere, just three seeds around like it was chicken feed, and that's your typical... tall, thin hemp plant. Yeah, But then the other, hemp is cannabis. So that plant here, King G, or any hemp plant here, for example, it was 0.6% THC. Well, then in America, they'd call it cannabis.
Yeah.
So it's not. There's no actual difference
it's
in this
all,
plant.
It's all cannabis sativa L.
Exactly right.
If we just
It's all cannabis, and then we could vary what it's called just by, it's just what we determine the name. So it means... nothing. These people that go on about saying, "Oh, is this hemp or cannabis?"
It's
the same thing.
Yeah, it's about chemotypic profile.
Exactly. Yep. And so, with the choosing of the seed, we just thought, "Okay, we got King G. We knew it worked well. Did different densities. The bigger plants were because we spaced them out more, so they had more room to grow, get sun.
Yeah, roots got to spread out more, which means they can get more nutrients and whatever.
Exactly right. Yep. Get more sunlight. Get more room to grow, and they're not competing next to other plant to try and get taller to get the sun first. So it's that's all it comes down to. The exact same plant, you could grow one 3 centimeters next to each other and another one a meter apart and they'll look completely different.
Yeah.
Okay.
One will look like your cannabis with your big buds.
So I understand in the EU they have a really small list of cultivars varieties that they can use for hemp farming, for what they call technical hemp over there. Is there such a list in Australia?
Well, there's kind of two ways to it. One, there's – okay, so the thing is with all these plants, they're not actually really an actual strain as such. They haven't been stabilized.
Yeah.
So it's not like a Granny Smith apple where when you grow it, it's the same thing each time.
Sure.
There are a couple of those that have been stabilized. The last time I checked, anywhere from 6 to 15, I think there was in Australia. This isn't hemp and medicinal cannabis varieties. But so it's all about, yeah, getting that, the traits that you want, keep backbreeding it with the mothers and father and stabilize that variety. But that hasn't really been happening. So in Australia, all it has to really be is comply to the THC levels. And obviously you just come from a licensed supplier, whether we get it from Australia, France or the US, etc.
But to be a licensed supplier, that just means it has to come from a federally legal source.
Sure. And there's some kind of test that they also have to do during the crop stage. You can't just say a person in America just grew one plant, another plant, bred them together and said, here we go, we've got a seed. I think you have a bit more evidence about actual some sort of stability, but it's a bit of a grey area. It's one of those areas where the regulation hasn't quite caught up with what needs to really be happening. So, which is good because we need to actually have a bit of free range to produce these varieties that are right for Australia as well. So our crop up north is a bit hotter, obviously, than all your down south regions. So had to be heat resistant, drought resistant, things like that. This crop was did have reticulation, so the drought side didn't matter, but it is good to be doing. If it's broad acre, you can't really be watering it too much. So we're trying to, breed these varieties that are good for different conditions and different uses.
Yeah. Very cool, very cool. Mm. So your licensing procedure to get your license, how much of a pain was that?
No, not at all.
Yeah, okay.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it come down to it. We was lucky we had the right – everything was in place. The farm was ready to go.
Yeah.
It already was fully enclosed, fully fenced. It was already a biosecure area. It doesn't have to be because of the chicken farm.
Yeah, because a chicken farm has to meet biosecurity measures.
Yeah. That didn't matter with all this, but it obviously just all helps. On paper, things look harder. It says you need certain security, but that can be as simple as you're making sure you've got some storage with a lock.
Yeah.
You put your seeds in there. Obviously, you just confirm all these things with the regulator, but it's definitely the hemp side of things. Just give it a go. A lot of people are asking about, how did you do this? But just print off the application and start answering the questions.
In Australia, is the regulator the Office of Drug Control?
No, for the hemp, it's the Agricultural Department side of things. So, nothing to do with the ODC or TGA, none of that.
Yeah, see, I guess the Ag Department, they would have an eye on the potential future of the economic advantages of this plant in the agronomic sector as well, wouldn't they? So they've probably got a bit more motivation to make this streamlined.
Yeah, it's a really interesting area at the moment. I believe they're going to allow us to be using more of the plant. At the moment, the rule is we can use industrial hemp for seed, fibre, using the stem and the seed pretty much. We can't use the flower, the cannabinoids and terpenes. We have to throw it in the bin. Or turn it into mulch destroy it.
That's a real shame, isn't it?
It is a shame, certainly when anyway, we won't get into all that. But the thing is they will see that to be a viable industry we can't keep doing this. Whether they go down the path of we supply the medicinal cannabis manufacturers, the extracts or API or just the biomass, as long as it's grown under the right conditions. GAP, good agricultural practices, or whether we're allowed to do the full plant use like America, non-therapeutic, so no medical claims, but just your nutraceutical CBD kind of products, that would be a dream come true. But I dare say they're going to have to look at doing something. We can't keep on throwing it in the bin. It just doesn't work.
The TGA, am I correct in believing that they're currently reviewing CBD for over-the-counter sales?
They are. The one of those areas again. So if that rule were to change that they're proposing where it comes down to a Schedule 3, that's all well and good. But for a Schedule 3 to be able to be given over the counter by a pharmacist, it has to have gone through the clinical trials.
Yeah, okay.
So no product would actually fit that bill except for Sativex, I think, from GW Pharma or one of their products, which is a – and again, it has to be CBD isolate.
Yeah, yeah.
So – Well, bats, you buy that in a lollipop in the UK, you know, so they need to relax it a bit more than that. Look, it's a step in the right direction. It's great, but it's, again, one of those rules that people are getting excited thinking they'll just be able to walk in next February or whenever the day was and just buy their CBD oil.
It's not going to happen.
Nope, we've got to go through the millions, if not billion-dollar clinical trial, up to 10 years. You know, it's but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So at least they're receptive to at least exploring the options available to us.
At least they're not, making it a Schedule 9. It's going the right way. Yeah, and I did a submission into that, and part of it was, an interesting point is, so the industrial hemp side, there's a company in America at the moment that is importing or exporting their hemp and using it in the medicinal cannabis system, and they're able to do that, whereas our local farmers cannot. So it's good. We can use that as ammunition to try and say, well, look, you know, obviously the system's fine there. Can we get involved as well? But yes, it's what we deal with at the moment. But we'll get there in time. We just have to keep on educating.
Interesting. Pet nutraceuticals.
Yes.
I know nothing about it. I generally feel relatively well armed coming into these chats that I know the topic reasonably well. I know next to nothing about pet nutraceuticals, and it seems like there's not that much great information easily accessible. What can you tell us about it? Why are you involved? What do you see? What's it all about?
Well, okay, I don't know much about pet nutraceuticals, but I know a lot about hemp and cannabis. So hemp products for pets is my...
I should specify, yes. So the hemp nutraceuticals?
Yep. So pretty much with these, the first range of products we have is a hemp seed-based products. So we've got a hemp seed nectar. Mm-hmm. It's literally a $20 bottle of hemp seed nectar that is fixing things like your arthritis, inflammation, pain within a few days. It's really opened my mind to nutrition, omega-3, 6, 9, vitamins and minerals. There's no cannabinoids or terpenes in these, and it is... Well, yeah, I can't believe how well it's working. It's, I wouldn't have believed it, to be honest. When I first started supplying this product, I did say, I'm not going to make any of these claims. I don't believe it could be that. And then literally over 90% of the dogs trying it, it's the people are coming back saying they can't believe what it's actually doing. And they're on all these other products as well to try and, you know, your cortisone injection, things like that, and they're not helping as much. And this simple little hemp seed nectar, a little bit different to hemp seed oil in the way that we don't process it or refine it down as much. Yeah. So it's got a little bit more phytonutrients in there. Yeah. But still, any old hemp seed oil, they're full of nutrients. I believe there's things in there that we haven't found yet that's doing a lot of the magic. But, they're working really well. So
I think it says something when an advocate, an enthusiast is caught off guard by the success of something that they're trying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's Oh, I can't believe it. And the other product, which is, again, a hemp nectar and then fish oil, coconut oil, the amount of things that's helping with your ear infections, allergies, it's all about gut health. So it's just improving the internal environment and the body's fighting for itself. So it's really opened my mind to that, and I should probably stop eating so much Maccas.
Yeah. fair call. So almost 90% of the feedback is that positive.
For that nectar and pain, it's unbelievable. And then in humans too, the nectar, they can all have that. It's all human grade. It's not cannabinoids. It's just omegas, things like that. So people are coming back as a joke saying, oh, can I try this? And they do, and then it works. Yeah. Even a lady with fibromyalgia. Yeah, okay. That's not to say it's going to help every case of that. It's a very broad term.
My partner has fibromyalgia as well as a few other things, and she's tried quite a few different types of CBD oil that we've got through the internet. Black market, and she's only ever had success out of one, which she can't get now, which was Charlotte's Web.
Right, yep.
That's the only one that really she found helped with
that.
Yeah,
right. And this is what comes down to the entourage effect and that full spectrum we talk of, because some people think, oh, I tried a CBD oil, it didn't help. No, CBD oil is not for me. And it's much the same they do with cannabis in general. Oh, I smoked some cannabis when I was really drunk when I was 18 and I didn't like that feeling. Yep. So cannabis isn't for me. Well, it's not all the same. Mm-hmm. You can have – it's just like going to the shop and trying Bacardi 151 and then just saying, no, alcohol's not for me. Yep. You know, you should be able to just have a very light beer or – sorry, a light strain, et cetera, et cetera. But so back onto the point of the CBD oil, it could have been, yeah, minor cannabinoid or even a specific terpene that was really helping with that area. Yeah. So, and it makes it hard because we can only test for, or easily test for 11.
So therefore it comes just down by case by case, trial and error of what terpenes, what cannabinoids work for that certain person because we're all different.
Exactly, yeah. Certain person in a certain condition. So you're exactly right. Even, and that's what makes it quite hard, definitely the medicinal cannabis side of things. All of the medicines, it's one active ingredient.
Yep.
This, there is, well, okay, the government consider an active ingredient THC over 1% or any other cannabinoid over 2%, and it's considered an API. Terpenes, I don't consider an API. I definitely consider them as a API, well, they're performing a role. And the cannabinoids too, a minor cannabinoid like CBC or CBDV, et cetera, if you've got that in a 1.5% reading, that's high.
Yeah.
But they don't consider that high. It's less than 2%, so you don't even have to label it, et cetera. So it's an interesting one there. But the hard thing is we're lucky we've got access to a HPLC machine, so we can test the cannabinoid profile.
Oh, wow.
But even still, we're only testing for 11 out of potentially 150 plus.
Can you tell us what the 11 are? Do you know off the top of your head? Or?
Yeah, I'll give it a whirl. THC, THCA, CBD, CBDA, CBC, CBG, CBGA, CBDV, CBN. A little bit two more, but yeah.
THCV by any chance?
There's some that do, some that don't. I'm thinking of the specific one that we have. It's either the CBDV and THCV, another machine. There's the standards they're called, and you purchase the isolates, I guess, of each of these individual cannabinoids that you can then test it against, use it to calibrate the machine. So some have a pack of 11 that have a couple extras. But yeah, those main ones there. But again, it's quite interesting because they're not testing for they're testing CBC but not CBCA. So if you're just testing a flower that hasn't been decarboxylated, and then you're getting a reading thinking, oh, it doesn't have much going on, but you're not testing.
Hasn't changed form.
It's, again, there's many, many gaps in this industry, as you'd expect, because it's a brand new, it's a new legal industry. And so there's so many areas to be working on, which is also hard for me because I want to be doing it all. But I've had to learn that, we've got to just focus down.
There's so much to get involved in, isn't there? I think you mentioned the entourage effect, and I think some people may have just been lost by the chat we just had about cannabinoids, terpenes, and the entourage effect. Can you tell the layman that's uninitiated, uneducated on this plant what you mean by this? So what is a terpene? What's a cannabinoid? And what do we mean when we say the entourage effect? And why is it so important that almost everybody that's passionate about this plant and involved in the industry says you have to get the entourage effect? Can you sum that up?
Yeah, definitely. So I will go with cannabinoids. So cannabinoids are obviously things like your THC, CBD, everyone's aware of. And then there's many, many more. We haven't even found them all yet. We've found 150-ish. The way they say they've found it is if they can isolate it.
Yep.
Actually, so here it is on its own. So they're the cannabinoids. Yeah, you've got an endless list of those. Your terpenes are the smells in the plant. So you've got things like linalool, which is in lavender. Myrcene, which is your most abundant terpene in cannabis, is found in mangoes. Pinene, all these kind of things. So, again, there's hundreds of those.
So can we just, I guess, for the people that are listening that don't really know much about terpenes and aromatics, if people have heard of essential oils, they're effectively talking about terpenes.
Exactly, yeah. So, and it's... Or you could be getting lavender oil, you're just getting your lavender. I dare say they're doing a similar extraction process where you're just getting your solvent and you're pulling out the oil from the plant, exactly what we're doing with cannabis. That's why cannabis should just be deemed an essential oil.
So these terpenes are present in almost all plant species?
Yes, yep. Everything is the smells, yeah. So interesting one is, so the mangoes and myrcene, so... just an example. So a lot of these things I'll talk about, it's anecdotal as well. Obviously, haven't put it through clinical trials, but we're believing these things are showing some patterns. But anyways, so myrcene, if you have that at a level of 0.5% or more mixed with THC, that causes your couch lock. That's what puts you on the couch and you can't get up. Or the sedative effect, I should really call it. Pinene is more of that uplifting effect. This is another area that, again, it's a lot of misinformation going on. People say, oh, that's sativa indica.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, no, that's incorrect.
It's a good one to clear up. It's a good one to clear up because not many people in the current industry that have been in it for a long period of time really want to discuss this because
– I'll do it.
Let's do it. Let's just confront it.
You're all wrong. No, it's so sativa and indica is the phenotype, the appearance, the physical makeup of the plant. So an indica is a short, broad, stocky plant, sativa, tall, skinny. That is the end of it. It has nothing to do with the chemical makeup. Mm-hmm. The chemical makeup is the chemotype. That is what is making the plant have a certain effect on us.
Sure.
So what gives you an uplifting feel? I don't believe it's about sativa indica. It's about those terpenes we just mentioned.
Yeah, and I think part of the early, I guess, sentiment amongst the cannabis community that an indica produces this couch lock and a sativa gives you the uplifting high is that maybe 40, 50 years ago, these were all basically what you'll call landrace varieties. So they're isolated to particular geographical regions. They're inbreeding, so they're producing specific abundance of cannabinoids and terpenes. So, you know, if you have your Afghanicas that may have been quite high in myrcene, that may have led people to believe that it was the indica, the appearance of this plant. It's so different to something I'd see in Thailand. They believe that it's that growth characteristic that signifies what effect they're going to have. But you could quite easily breed to get specific terpene and cannabinoid profiles into a sativa appearing plant.
And well, this is the thing I look forward to kind of studying as well because, look, we may actually find that, well, who knows, there could be a link to the terpene profile affecting the appearance. Probably not. Probably definitely not. But but the thing is, again, with the terpene side, a hemp farmer I was watching do a seminar last year actually mentioned that they believe and I'm looking forward to testing it once we get some clones from our current crop, that you can affect the terpene profile from the different plants you plant around it. So I'm going to do that and just have in an enclosed tent.
That's really cool.
I'll get a clone of the same plant and in one tent have a heap of lavender around there as well, around it. Okay. And then I'll get another one and have a heap of another plant and see if the terpene profile is varied.
Well, there's a story in stoner culture about a guy, I think it was Sam the Skunk Man, created a strain called Strawberry Cough. Was that Sam the Skunk Man or?
Kyle Cushman.
Kyle Cushman. Yes, well done, Adam. Welcome, Adam. We've got a new bloke sitting in with us. His name's Adam. He's a young fella. He's very switched on with cannabis and he's just helped us out with that. Thank you very much, man. Welcome to the show. So Kyle Cushman, and he got given some bag seed from a variety that was growing in a strawberry patch for how many generations apparently. And this guy would conceal his plant in this strawberry crop. And they believe that it, over all these generations, it started to take on these terpenes similar to strawberry.
Yeah, well, if that's actually, the story of how that strain came about, because it definitely does taste like strawberry.
Yeah, everybody says
from what I've heard.
Yeah, so everybody says it that consumes in legal settings.
Yes.
But it is interesting. It's a great line of study to go down, I think.
Yeah, so that's – I'd really like to get into some real
– That's just interesting as well how the different plants actually sort of –
They talk
to each other and trade. Yeah, I'll give you this and you give me that.
I look forward to proving it, this crop we just did at the farm, it was, using the one variety, but again, like we talked about earlier, it's not stable. So you can't do side by side, even with this density trial, to be honest. At the end of it, I've gone, I can't, this data's not usable really in a commercial setting because, well, there's just too many variances in each plant and one's producing buds 10 times the size as another, I could have planted them in different fields. It wasn't about where it was. So what I'm now going to do is I've picked out probably 11 or 12 special plants out of the 50 odd thousand we had. And I'll put those into a breeding regime, try and stabilize them, but also I look forward to cloning them and then, doing some controlled studies, look, here's one, it probably won't work as well, but like when we shave, our hair comes back thicker. So when those trichomes start to grow, I'm just going to get rid of them all and see if they grow back thicker. Who knows?
Yeah, man.
You never know. I'm just going to troll these random things that you never
do.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how we learn.
Yeah, when you've got, I've literally got millions and millions, after this crop, I have billions of seeds, so there's no shortage. So, we can actually play around and have some fun.
That's really cool.
And actually, kind of, I guess it's how it would have all happened when people started growing in a bigger scale, and then you didn't worry, a plant snapped and fell over. You didn't try and fix it. You just let it stay there. And then it's probably how they learnt about some of these growing techniques now with your scrog methods, things like that, about time.
Stress training.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's because this crop that I had, boy, it went through a lot of stress. It was planted in a 47-degree heat wave during that December heat wave we had. And we were up north, so it was hotter.
Yeah, it was hot.
And then, that storm that hit the other week.
Mm. Yep.
Was, yeah, the timing was bad, wasn't it?
Was like three storms this year. Yeah, the two.
Fortunately, one was post-harvest, though, wasn't it?
No, that was.
Oh, really?
That bad one.
Oh, that was the weekend you harvested, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the week before. So if this is the thing, it's I'm kind of glad it happened because I can. It helps my case about moving indoor.
Yeah.
I want to go indoor.
Why do you want to go indoor? Other than the
just
elements,
the hands-on approach of actually. I like to look at the plant every single day and a bit more hands-on. The broad acre, you just chuck the seeds out and that's the end of it, really.
Were pests an issue for you?
No, not at all. No. Cool. Many ladybugs doing the
sweet. So
doing
you,
their job.
You introduced beneficials and
They came themselves, yeah.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, that's everything really cool. Was perfect.
Is that a benefit of doing it in Western Australia? Like,
well, it depends where you are. No, actually, definitely not. So there's a farm not too far from ours that actually have an issue with, I think it's called Haliotis or Haliothus. It's a that white moth, I believe, but the grub of that or the larvae, it gets in and eats all the seeds. I saw one in ours and I got really worried, but then that was literally it. It didn't actually wipe out the whole crop or anything. Same with birds. They're a big issue down south. I saw two and that was the end of them, the kind of thing. We've been lucky, but in saying the birds, they talk and the next year they'll be back.
Yeah.
Sure. But the thing is, again, I'm really involved in that side for the full plant use when they change that rule. So I'm not going to be doing broadacre crop for seed.
Yeah, 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 sure.
Things like that. So it's
you want it more targeted. Yeah.
Yep. And at the moment, I'm still doing this strain development. Anyway, I can still create varieties that have got some good terpene profiles and things like that. We obviously can't use it in a therapeutic setting, but there's nothing to say we can't do the
study.
A little bit of groundwork for it. And everything I do, it's for the right reason. It's on a legitimate scale. It's to help the industry as a whole.
Sure.
Or provide varieties that we can supply the whole of WA or Australia in certain conditions or whatever the uses are. So, I dare say in some of these areas where the regulators, it's a grey area, I do feel that we can show them, look, this is for the greater good.
Just quickly, do you talk with the other hemp farmers around Western Australia as well as Australia, and you guys like share information of how they're going, you're going, and or is it more secretive and like, we're doing this is our crop?
Both, really, half and half. There's I tell everyone everything. I tell everyone too much, probably.
Yeah.
But again, it's we need to share.
We need to, and this is a theme that I hear from some people that are quite prominent in the industry. We need to share this information. We need to talk. Something that's frustrating with so many people that I meet in this industry is that everybody's keeping something up their sleeve. It seems that way. It seems like you're always divulging more. People with personalities such as ourselves, you're always divulging more than you're getting.
Yeah, well, and I'm told that's the wrong way to do it. I've been told many times we have two eyes, two ears,
and that's when you get business people, business people, and people that are passionate about a topic.
Yeah, and I'm hoping. I mean, it's true. I do need to get a good balance of both, but I do want to make sure I remain myself and helpful, passionate, and kind, and not actually treating it. I just don't like
the
corporate side of this.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of needed in a way. I need to make sure I set things up right because I can start all this, say, with Medicare and Health, be doing it all well. We have some great things going on, but I didn't kind of protect it in a way that it can be swept from under us, and then we've lost our cause. We can't actually help the people we want to anymore. I'm learning as we go with that one, and I'm getting some good mentors on the way. But I think so far just being me has been what's worked best because I think a lot of these companies, they've already got the suits and now they need the cannabis guy.
Know-how. That's right. And that's what's so frustrating, that it seems to me in these, maybe not so much now, but definitely in the first couple of years, the people that were getting the licenses and getting the capital, they weren't cannabis people. There were very few of them. Most of the people getting this funding were corporates, people that have built businesses, built companies.
Got the money behind them.
Profitability, and they've got a track record, and that's their CV. How frustrating is that to you that people that are probably most deserving of being involved in this industry have found it so difficult to get involved?
Well, you know, we're just going to keep at it. We'll get there. If these other bigger corporates didn't do what they did, I wouldn't have probably got in the industry. I did it because I was annoyed at what they were doing and I wanted to do it the better way.
That's true. So the affordability becomes a big part of it. You know, you look at patients that are saying, well, I've got to go to the black market because I can't afford to do it the legal way. These things, I guess, stimulate minds such as yourself.
We'll be trying to supply everything at black market price. So the way I determine the cost is what's the cheapest amount we can supply without us losing money. I'm not on a wage. No one in my companies are paid.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for a couple of years, both companies, Hemp Brothers and Medicare, and I haven't taken a single dollar yet. It's purely Hemp Brothers is making revenue, obviously. I just put it all back into the company. Medicare's pre-revenue, but with the raises we do, it's purely first. We need to get products in patients' hands, help them, and I just have a good feeling the rest will come from
Build a business model from that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've got some good things going on there, but again, I don't need to pay myself $400,000 a year. Yeah. Well, I won't mention their names. One of the companies paid their CEO $420,000 a year, and I'm trying to appeal to the 420 number, but it's money. It's pulling the piss.
As much as I would like to call out the person you're discussing and some of the people, we won't do it on this show. Maybe once we've got a bit more traction on board, but that's definitely happening, man. There's tax, there's public money going into these companies, and there's definitely people taking the piss and living the high life based on that.
Yeah, and in the end, they can do what they want, and we'll do what we do. And I don't, I don't really worry about what they're doing now. I'm invested in them all, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I've got shares in them all, and I used to look at them every single day. I haven't now looked at them since I started my company because I focus on that and what we're doing. And and to be honest, it's actually there's now ways where I'm contacting these companies to say, look, I can now help you out. Do you want to partner up in something that I can help you with, like delivery mechanisms, things like that? We've got some interesting things going on there. But so I want to work together with everyone that's got in it for the right reasons as well. And the companies that say they know it all already, well, good luck to them.
But they'll go their own road.
There's a long way to go with it. This is a 10, 20, 30 year plan for me. It's I'm not here just to sell a few products
and, for the long haul
and run away. Yeah. I'm in here to really learn what's going on. If I could just do R&D the whole time without needing to actually be supplying products first off, I would, because I want to really make the best product, but we also have to have a revenue in generation as well. So, and to be honest with that as well, it seems that with certain conditions, just standard run-of-the-mill cannabis is still helping them. So if we can be supplying that, we'll do that for now while we do some more research in the areas.
Very cool. Very cool. So what's your next step with Medicare? You're trying to expand the number of prescribers or people that are willing to prescribe. Do you have anything you can divulge that is on the horizon?
So Medicare, we'll have our we've got a few actually exciting things going on. I'll go into a little detail. We've got our first Medicam product should be here hopefully this year. Corona's got in the way of getting it over from Canada a little bit. We've now partnered up with another local company for the CBD side of things to just get the ball rolling there. So that's one exciting thing, to just have our own brand around. There's a little bit of research put into it. I couldn't go choose exactly what varieties or cultivars we wanted, but with the cultivars we had access to, I could at least put my spin on it, and that's about certain levels of decarboxylation, things like that, to try and get a broader.
So the processing, you're looking at processing a little bit?
Yeah, well, I told the our partners it's my formula. I told them exactly what I wanted made. So they told me, we've got these varieties. So I looked at all their profiles and said, okay, I'd like to mix this, and do it like this. I used to tell a lot of people this method until I realized that maybe it was, I just thought it was pretty obvious, but I think it's not obvious, so I won't mention it. But
no, that's cool.
But things like that, you've got these other companies where they're just providing a product that's just whatever, it's cannabis. They're not actually thinking about what else is in it. So, for example, they might be giving a Parkinson's patient a product that actually might stimulate or excite the movement. You don't want that. Yeah, and that, again, comes down to the sedative or uplifting varieties. So just even the small amount of thought like that we're putting into it, and affordability – it's going to be very affordable. I think at least half the price of everything else at the moment.
Yeah, beautiful.
Flour we'll have available will be hopefully 300 to 350 an ounce.
Yeah.
Again, it's, I mean, the recreational market in my mind is medicinal. It's you're going home after work and consuming something. If it's not a beer, it's a cannabis, that's medicinal. You're just relaxing. It's these some forms of obviously recreational use, I think, when we're a bit younger, but then I dare say it all turns into a form of
becomes
medicinal.
Becomes sort of medicinal therapeutic, yep. If you want to use that word.
Yep.
A lot of people like to use that. And I think we were discussing prior to you arriving here just the difference between use and abuse.
Yep.
And you mentioned younger people getting involved and maybe using it so-called recreationally.
I think I learned from that this also helps in this area for me. And then, you know, it's still like a lot of people would have started as recreational and then the people that are still using it, not all of them, but a vast majority, I dare say, it's turned into a form of medicinal. They're sitting at home on your couch having a smoke isn't recreation. You're not with your friends. That's a form of of therapy to me. So, and so I don't have anything against appealing to all that market. It's what that's the market at the moment. They're the ones that already believe in this medicine.
Yeah, sure.
The reason they're not getting it is it's not affordable. They can get it from their other provider already. So, I'll bring it, make it as cheap as we possibly can.
That's awesome.
And then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was talking to Tom Forrest off air, not so recently, but we were discussing affordability and some of the figures he was throwing out there for production costs, cultivation and production costs were very appealing. And if it comes to fruition, like you say, you should be able to meet black market pricing. And then it becomes far more interesting to see where this industry goes.
Yeah, definitely. And once we also find the right formulas, we're going to realize, for example, epilepsy, you just need a very high amount of CBD, or you may need a very high amount of CBD, and it can make it cost prohibitive, but I won't reveal too much, but, you know, there's another formula I know of that minimises the amount of CBD required 20-fold.
Wow.
And you just need a small amount of this other cannabinoid. Mm-hmm. So it's all, you know, you can make the product more effective. These base ones, it's just what we know now, okay, CBD, THC. A lot of them are also just doing isolates. Again, it's the entourage effect is missing, so you need a lot more of it to be effective or it stops working over time. So that's where the R&D needs to be done and is being done about, okay, how do we make it more effective?
Do you think it will get to a point where sick people or whatever, patients will be able to go into their doctor, do a test, like a blood test or something, and then the doctor will be able to say, okay, you need this formula for your
DNA matching one. I've heard it's been brought up. I wonder, who knows? It's an interesting one. I'm not sure if it could be specifically, well, who knows? I've no knowledge in that area of it. I definitely agree it's, each person, you've got two people with Parkinson's, the same product may not work for both. It does also come down to person and condition. So, how we find that, who knows? I think it really, the THC side of things, keep that through the doctor perhaps, and every other cannabinoid just have that as a nutraceutical and we can find our own blend.
If the fear is the psychoactive properties of the plant, which it seems to be, like the general fear amongst the community is the psychoactive elements. Like you say, if we remove the THC and put that in the hands of doctors to make those decisions, I don't see too many reasons why we shouldn't have access to other compounds that they certainly haven't been proven to be detrimental to our health.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's we're just going to hopefully the government slowly, as they keep learning, they change these rules. It's like with the industrial hemp side of things, how we can't have we can't have that level of THC. But my theory is, can we grow a high THC variety, but just let it mature enough so all the THC converts to CBN, and then there's no THC again? But that wouldn't. It's not compliant with THC. But in my theory, the end product doesn't have THC.
That takes quite an advanced understanding of the plant and the processes involved with the cannabinoids. Maybe the people that will be making those decisions potentially won't have researched to that depth.
I don't know. Definitely what's going on. And so, I'm also not sure when I talk to the government about these things, how much or what to tell them. And I want to be as open as we can, but also am I going to be telling them something that will make it harder for us than change a rule? Because there's a lot of grey areas in it. And again, I want to do it all properly, legitimately, but then – and I also want to make sure we can get the work done. So it's a hard one with you know, for example, a farmer last year, a couple of years ago, there was a rule. You've got to tell the regulator when you've planted or when you've sowed a seed. He did a clone. So that wasn't sowing a seed. That was propagating a clone. So he didn't tell them. And then they saw it. They got annoyed. And he told them about, well, you showed the rules. You said you want this. That's not actually what happened. So they went and changed that rule and you couldn't do that now.
So I bit him in the ass.
Yeah. So it's one of those bits where it's a hard one.
So now you have to tell them every time you clone and sow seeds and pretty much modify or do something to your crop.
Exactly, yeah. And so back to the bit about the whole CBN side, you know, I want to explain all those kind of things to them so we can get that rule opened up, but then it might bite you on the backside later and you've revealed something that they changed the rule for the negative. It's a hard one, but look, we just work with the rules we are given. Mm-hmm. And I do predict that it's all heading in the right direction. At the last Kemp conference in Frio at the start of this year, I was talking to a few of the regulators that were there and they did say that they see it happening in terms of full plant use. They just need to figure out what way this is
so
working.
So do you feel that's what's going on? Because there's a feeling, there's an energy about the place. Some people feel like we're moving towards complete legalization. Some people feel we're moving to more accessibility. Do you feel that energy and that evolution that by and large we're moving in a consistent direction towards opening things up and the greater community gaining a greater understanding of this plant, its various uses, and we may get to the point that it's more common knowledge?
I feel it is, but then also I'm in this bubble and I think that everyone's starting to get on board and understand it all, and then I step out of my bubble, talk to someone else and realise they'll tell me, oh, you're going to be looking good when it's legalised. And I said, it was legalised in 2016.
Yeah, it's so weird, isn't it? Yeah, how do people miss that?
Yeah, you know, we're already here. You can go to the doctor today and get prescribed. You know,
it's strange. What about the other misconceptions? Okay, so let's clear this up for listeners that are base level, still learning about this plant. Let's clear things up with the misconceptions about what medicinal cannabis is right now.
Okay, so people
will say, no, medicinal cannabis is just oil. Or people will say medicinal cannabis doesn't contain THC. They're misconceptions. There are products that may be oil. There are products that may contain THC. It's all coming from the same plant. There's just different profiles as we discussed earlier. Medicinal cannabis is cannabis that
and growing under a medicinal license.
Produced. And that's it. So this misconception that there's this whole other arm of cannabis that doesn't act the same way as cannabis that we've grown to know.
It's all a way to kind of at least understand why they do it, because if we just come on saying, oh no, it's the exact same thing, well, that's not going to encourage them to change their viewpoint. We need to make it as if it is a completely different thing. So the people that have been...
People need that middle ground to get their heads around the change in information that we have on this plant. Do you think people need some middle ground to get their heads around it, to adjust their line of thought?
The main bit really, the way to think of it is, in a medicinal setting, we're dealing with sick people. They've got compromised immune systems, et cetera. So when we're growing these plants, you want to be sure it is what it is. Get the cost side out of it, because down the track it's going to cost $32 when it's on the PBS. Mm-hmm. That's a fact. So it's the exact product that fits that criteria. It's very helpful but very expensive. So it will be affordable like every other medicine.
Sure.
Then everyone will be going for the medicinal side because it's cheaper. But beyond that, you can be growing at home the best you possibly can. In the soil at home, outdoor. You have no idea about the heavy metals or pesticides that are just in that soil there. I mean, look, obviously people are doing it all the time and abusing it and everything like that, and there's no huge issues going on. But in saying that, when you're dealing with very ill people, you want to have it as safe as possible. So the medicinal side of it, at least you've got that assurity that it's been tested for all your molds. Mold's a big one. You know, so someone's got a lung issue. You don't want them to have to inhale a moldy cannabis. And I'm not talking about mold that you can see. Mold all these plants that we're growing is actually over the mold limit. I thought it was, you look at it, it looks perfect. When you test it, it's thousands times too high.
Wow.
In saying that, our levels are ridiculously low to be compliant.
Very pharmaceutical.
But in saying that as well, you know, the average kind of, normally the average smoker, if it's just for a sore knee or bit of sleep or something, and it didn't work that day, it's okay. But now we're getting into this mainstream side of it, and you've got epileptic kids, you know, autism, Parkinson's, motor neuron, life-threatening conditions. Well, you want it to be reliable.
Absolutely.
One about that whole side before I mentioned with the actual safety of the product, how it was grown, but the other side too, just in terms of the cannabinoid and terpene profile, if your epileptic child has had a formula that works, they're now seizure-free, that, and it's from a home grower, and now they've grown that same strain, but just, you know, a little bit different time of the year, et cetera, whatever, it's slightly varied, and that one little secret ingredient in there that was really helping that case is now a bit lower and doesn't work. Well, that person's now having seizures, and one seizure could be the last seizure. So
the predictability is very important.
Yeah, with the medicinal sense. The real medicinal side where it's these more severe cases, I think it definitely warrants the extreme testing it goes through. Even the shelf life, things like that, you know, you can't be having an oil that's sitting there for 7 years and someone still have it. I mean, look, you could maybe fine, but we've got to look at it as not our, you know, just backyard product, but treat it like our grandparents having it, et cetera, et cetera. And
so it's the same plant.
Exactly the same plant.
It's gone through a rigorous process in terms of licensing and regulation to meet market, to be presented as medicinal. But some medicinal cannabis can get people high, some can't. There are different forms to consume it in. Some people take it as an oil. Some people will even consume the dry flower itself.
Yep. And I mean, the word high probably, I mean, relaxed might be a better word, or sure, you know, medicated as such. But it's the thing as well is you titrate your dose, you start low and you build it up. Mm-hmm. And if that one time you feel you had an effect that you didn't quite like with the THC, then you back it down. Mm-hmm. A dosage level, and you get a bit more immune to that and keep building
It's about respecting it like you would respect any other medication that you don't just go out and smash as much as you can fit in your mouth in one go.
Yeah.
You respect it, you limit your use and build on it as you require.
Exactly right. And also, if you have too much, this high isn't a scary thing. In fact, it's what appeals to most people, which is why they actually like this feeling.
Can we dispel the myth for some people that think that you go batshit crazy when you consume this plant with THC and you get a psychoactive effect? You're not going to run around the streets with a knife stabbing people. Like, it's,
you shouldn't do. I mean, it's the thing is, the half it is, someone might do that and the news will bring out and say they were on X, Y, and Z, and they always make sure they'll mention cannabis as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I mean, look, it could have been none of the drugs that did it. There's something, lots of things going. Everyone's got,
people have mental health issues.
Exactly right. And The just in terms of the bringing it back where it's more about someone just consuming it and having that intoxicated feeling as such, so not worrying about the actual, say, mental health side of all those things to do with it. Mm-hmm. But just that feeling of it. Yeah, it's, I dare say everyone that actually was worried about then has the medicinal cannabis, and they always say, oh, is that what it was?
It's not as bad.
That's not what
it was. The fear exceeded the reality.
If we wanted to put some scare tactics on the effects of the other drugs, say, you know, people would never touch them. Mm-hmm. But it's just that it's the only medicine that's actually had existed before the medicine was here. Any other medicine, someone invents it, you put it through the trials before we only ever see it once it's already a medicine. This one has been around forever, so we've got an opinion on it, and now it's a medicine. So it's a bit of a unique one.
It's interesting.
And it's just in its own world that it's a bit unfair. But yeah, there's nothing to be afraid of for the high. And even if someone had there's definitely people out there would say, oh, I don't believe in that, I had a horrible experience. But the next day, it was all back okay again.
Yeah.
There was no organ damage. There's no life-threatening issues. There is that issue, the area of the psychosis side of things.
Absolutely.
It's, again, we need to do the right research into it, but we've now found that CBD can treat psychosis. Mm. And so, again, people say, no, cannabis causes it. Well, no, maybe we need to say a specific amount of THC or other things can be causing that.
I think we need to look into environment as well, and a lot of other things involved in the lives of the people that are suffering from psychosis, and they call it cannabis-induced psychosis. But the cases that I'm aware of from people around me that may have experienced something along those lines, there's a lot of things going wrong in their life at the time. And there's a lot of other factors that I would believe would be contributing, but it seems to be that the second that someone presents with psychosis and the doctor says, have you consumed cannabis? If the answer is yes, bang, that's the cause.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I'm not sitting here as well as saying that it has no link at all and, you know, cannabis can't do any harm. But the thing is, just the way they blanket statement and call it cannabis as well, when we've actually now learning that some forms of cannabis with the CBD side can be helping it. So mm-hmm. they just got to, people have to have an open mind and not just shut it off straight away because of one story or one time they tried it after 30 beers as well. A lot of people try cannabis when they're very drunk for the first time and then they
spin out, throw up and don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, well, you didn't do it the right way. But, you know, it's not for everyone. But all I try to get across is it's the people that don't give it the time of day at all, meanwhile they're dying from certain conditions that I know it can help.
Yeah.
It's really hard to come.
Due to a stigma and a preconception that they have on it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. My own grandma, sitting there trying to get her just to rub balms on her. You know, she goes, oh, no, cannabis, you know, it's the devil's drug. Oh, I went to Amsterdam. There was smoke this thick on all the streets of the floors. Like, Grandy, you sound like this typical just, you know, anyway. But and then I look to my left and I see a physio invoice there for all her arthritis. Mm. And she could just be having a little balm. You know, it doesn't have to actually have an oil or smoke it or anything. It can be a nice, just a topical. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
So,
and it's not even going to give her any psychoactive effect. She's not going to. She's
And this one, I was even at first trying to get her to have the hemp seed oil.
Mm-hmm.
And just, again, oh no,
just that for you.
Yeah. So but it's hard. But
it's a long road.
It's a long road, and we have to. I understand. Yeah, they've had lifetime of being against something. I can't just flick the switch and then change their opinion overnight. But the thing is, the people are getting prescribed, the numbers are increasing at like tenfold. And as this happens, more and more positive stories come out, more people see their parents, their grandma, their sister, brother, whatever is on it, and they're all going well. And then that changes that stigma. They see the truth in front of them and they no longer believe an article they read from 19 whenever.
Do you feel that with the patients that you've dealt with, patients and GPs, do you feel there's a large number of negative stories coming out?
From people on the products? No. Yes. No, not at all. Like some of the more severe side effects I've heard, a headache. You know,
okay, yeah.
Things like that. Dry mouth.
Yeah. Sore eyes, dry eyes.
Obviously we know about the red eye. I haven't heard of people saying about sore eyes at all, but literally they're just very minor things that a lot of other medicines, it's just standard. I haven't heard of people having their product and then they start convulsing or like that. No, I mean, look, I'm obviously not over all of it, and I'm
absolutely
the doctors have, they obviously tell us all the data like that, but in my experience of case studies, things like that, it's and what we do hear about results, they're minor things, and it's not every case. It's some people it's more reacting to the actual carrier oil, MCT coconut oil, that can cause some stomach issues with some people. So it's not actually the cannabinoids, it's the carrier.
My partner, again, like MCT oil does not agree with her. So if any of the oil or products that have MCT oil, she won't touch anymore.
Yeah, right. Yep. And that's one I've been hearing with the MCT. Now, I wonder if it's MCT, palm or coconut, because it's one thing I've just found out with our Canadians when I was formulating a product. I want MCT coconut, and I've learnt. And I read it was from palm, and I've gone, no, we're not using that. I've got to save the orangutans. And they couldn't find any pharma grade in Canada. And so it makes me wonder if a lot of these MCTs is actually palm oil.
Yeah.
And then if there is a difference between if it's MCTs, MCT, or if it's the palm side of coconut that gives this kind of issue. But yeah, that's the science that I hear something and I don't just go, oh, cool. Why is that happening? And, you know, what can we do here? So it's, there's no real severe issues. Majority of cases, it's very positive, or it's just done nothing. It's never a case of someone's, now got, happened to have four other medications to counteract the side effects they're having. Yeah.
You know? And then the beauty of it not being fatal, not having a fatal dose is a very big plus, because there are people that control these pharmaceuticals that they've been prescribed with, and like you say, they can have a fatal dose.
It's the leading, benzodiazepam is the leading killer in Australia of all drugs, accidental overdose, so heroin, everything. It's 35% of people of overdoses.
Prescription medications.
Yeah, well, benzos, sleeping tablets. Yeah, and then the opiates are 33%.
Wow.
So that's all drug overdoses. So that's why the main
– that's huge.
Yeah, that's the main thing that got me on to doing this was to get people I knew off these products. Mm-hmm. So my mum was on Lyrica and sleeping tablets, and I've gone, Mum, if you accidentally have too many of one of those, or you forget you've had one, have another, you might not wake up. And there is a silent killer. It happens every single day in Australia. Mm-hmm. You never hear of it because it's
not newsworthy.
It's just a quiet, it's a quiet death. But it you really start getting involved, you realise. But that's the worst case scenario. But even before that, and much more common is the quality of life that's reduced from all these side effects, constipation, you know, or just turning into almost like a zombie from all the other medicines they're on for things like epilepsy and things like that. And so it's really about much, even if it's just working as well on par as the other products, it's much safer. The side effects aren't there. You can have it long-term use. And the non-lethal bit is it does make me feel very confident about working in this industry. I wouldn't feel happy just making our own formulas of other ingredients and getting people to try it because they may die. This one here is different. I mean, I literally am telling a company a formula I want made and they're making it, and we're able to then put it through the tests and then get it prescribed to patients. It's kind of crazy, really, but it's safe because if someone was going to die from cannabis, it would have happened already.
Yeah.
When you see the big 10-gram dab or these kind of things, you know.
What are your thoughts on dabbing, okay? Because I think in Australia we're not terribly exposed to it, but the US it's big ticket, particularly in California, I think, and places like this, Colorado.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't like it. It's just, I mean, if they're worrying about the price of medicinal cannabis, they're having a 1 gram dab is a whole bottle of cannabis, if a whole 1,000 milligram bottle.
Yeah.
I just don't see the need for that. The micro dosing is actually I'm finding far more beneficial. Mm-hmm. We're finding a lot of every case is different, but some of the best results we're getting, things like motor neuron, is off a 0.75 milligram dose.
Wow, 0.75 milligram.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah. So
that's incredible.
Yeah. Well, that's 0.75 milligram of one of the cannabinoids. And then this is the bit. It might just be a small amount of another ingredient in there that's actually doing all this magic. Mm-hmm. And then you could have another person that's needing what they think is 100 milligram dose, but that's just because it's finally brought this other cannabinoid to that level. Who knows? We've got a long way to go.
Wow. Yeah.
But at least we're able to start looking into it.
What about endocannabinoid mapping? You know much about that?
No.
Okay. I was just thinking when we talk about how different people have different reactions, and there is discussion that people are trying to figure out how to map our endocannabinoid systems and figure out exactly why a different individual will react to different cannabinoid profiles to others.
That's happening. And that's why I'm excited now. I've just kind of started to get into the R&D with proper, research institutes. And I used to put all these, the government, CEOs, you know, unis and all these things on a pedestal and think, oh, you can't, I can't just call these people and talk to them.
Yeah.
And then I realized, hang on, I'm a CEO. And then I got, oh, hang on a minute. It's actually, I have these conversations and I was educating them on all these things. So I got more and more, this is a couple of years ago now, but more and more confident about it all. And then, so it was good. And then I ring people like a Curtin Uni or a research institute and discuss my ideas. And now we're about to sign a contract and start our clinical trials. That's cool. More than just your surveys and that, actually getting in the brain and looking at specific markers and what's really going on with these cannabinoids and cannabinoid receptors. So, I'm really excited for that, to really get some info. That's more really than cool. Just, this did that to them, but we can actually say, well, why that happened.
We talk about your endeavours to learn, and I want to get back to your hemp cultivation thing for a little bit if we could. You're talking about putting particular groups of plants together to see if they can inherit traits from each other. Can we explain? Plants communicate. Plants do have methods of communication. It's a real thing. Plants will allow nutrition to go to another plant that's more sickly. Can we go into a bit of detail about that and what you hope to achieve with these plots and inheritance?
Yeah, well, so that idea there just did come from that seminar I watched from the bloke mentioning it, and he actually said that he did see some evidence there, so I thought, well, I'll try it then. Now, I don't know whether it's about airborne or is it the under the soil and root base, so do I need to plant it in the same actual pot? or can it just be in a separate pot in that same tent? Who knows? Oh, this is what we'll find out.
Yeah, that's
cool. But again, it's really anecdotal. We can say, let's do that. Absolutely. But why that happened, who knows? We've got it. I mean, that's where I've got a partner with Medican. He's doing his PhD on hemp, just finishing it now.
Yeah.
And so he actually gets right in there and cuts out the roots and actually puts dye through it and sees what's really going on with all this kind of stuff. But we'll step one first, see if there's anything happening there, and then go further with it. But in terms of the plants communicating, I'm at step one of the knowledge there. But I look forward to seeing how it actually goes. But if we can alter the terpene profile that simply, well, gosh, that's going to make breeding a whole lot easier.
Oh yeah.
So we'll see. But for me, it's we just start at step one with these study things. Definitely phase one, you just keep it very simple. Otherwise, there's too much going on. So I'll just literally get a few clones in that same pot or plant, different, so lavender, which is high in linalool. I'll put some, basil and other one, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then test the terpene profile and see if there's any difference.
Yeah, that's cool. I like the way you're going with that. Very cool. So next step for Hemp Brothers, what's going on with your products? You're trying to get them nationally supplied, or are they nationally supplied? What's the story?
So with Hemp Brothers, the core focus at the moment is the hemp pet range. So we don't make that. We've got a partner over east in New South Wales that make that, the hemp pet. And so we're the exclusive suppliers in WA. Mm-hmm. We do have, that's been going on for 18 months now. So it's going well. We're in the pet city or your pet stores, things like that, and 40 odd vets, which is great. It's good to see them getting on board.
Absolutely.
And then now we're going to start going into the human food side of things, Hemp Brothers branded products.
Yeah, okay.
Just the basic range that is already around, your oils, seeds.
Proteins.
Yeah, protein. Just do those three for now, seed, oil, protein. I tried cooking with the flour and I failed, so I'll just leave that out. But it's just my cooking skills. But just to get a bit of our own brand on there, on the shelves, and then with our own farm, just see where that kind of leads. But it's all just kind of very casual. Open. Is probably not the right word, but
it out.
Yeah, we just do things. Actually, we've got our own horse product, actually, we've just done, so horse feed. That's actually quite exciting. I completely forgot about it. A horse is about to get euthanized, and they tried this feed. It's a byproduct from the crop, and it's running around now.
Very cool.
It's no longer. Wow. There's no cannabinoids or anything like that again. It's literally a byproduct of the I can't give it away. But a very cheap product. And again, it was, no one's using any of it. And we're going to stick our badge on that and start supplying that.
Nice.
But Hemp Brothers was literally started with $500. So just bought $500 worth of product and sold it.
Yeah.
Bought a bit more and sold it again. Put it back in, and then just me going around and just, spreading the word and, just talking to everyone about it. And then the thing is, the products are all great. They at the start, I just gave them the products. For the vets, I said, here, give that to another pretty dog. I'll see you next week.
Yeah, and you've got an order.
Yeah, because it works. That's the end of it.
So people can get these products at Pet. Where did you say?
In WA City? Pet City, that's obviously the main one. We've got probably 60-odd stockers or more, actually, around WA.
So jump on your website for people to track you down.
Yeah. We've got hempbrothers.com.au and then on Facebook as well. Got all the stockers on there and do little comps and giveaways and all that. And while we're on that topic, I guess we've got a group for the hemp farm that's called Our Hemp Farm on Facebook as well. So if people want to follow along there, they can.
Very cool.
That group's literally, no one's really been utilising it, but I want people just to get amongst it, and then if they've got any ideas, I'll do it for them, or they can come to the farm and test it themselves, just get hands on and
that's cool.
And do it. But no one's overly, I think they're a bit shy thinking it's all very official and corporate. Yeah. It's like, no, just throw ideas out. Let's learn. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, I'd love to chat off air about some of that with you.
Yep.
Medican. What's the go there? People, can they approach you openly? People that want to get involved, get themselves a prescription. Can you dive or steer them to the right doctors?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we can. I can help if they've got GPs that are interested in prescribing, not necessarily our product, any product. I can walk them through the process. It's very simple. When the Corona stuff's finished, we'll be doing our seminars again where we do go all the, through all these things. But yeah, no, people can contact me through, well, we've, yeah, you can just go, well, keep what's it easy. Go, well, we've got the two different ones. Maybe go, so there's Matt at Medican Consultants, my email. But maybe it's easy to contact me through Hemp Brothers because it's, we've got the Facebook or the, yeah, sure, the online presence with that. And yeah, just get in touch with me. And it's all just me anyway. You'll be able to find me with Hemp Brothers, me and a friend called Andrew. So yeah, one of us will answer and then I can help him out for sure.
Matt, you're a fascinating character, mate. You've got so many facets to what you do. Your mind is clearly working 24/7.
It's all anecdotal. So if anyone's listening and they're going, that's not true, well, it's, yes, it's just our theories.
Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure sitting down with you and having this chat.
We're going to have to do another chat, I think.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to get you back someday and go into a bit more depth about a couple of things and get into that mind a bit more because you're a fascinating guy. Thank you very much for coming on board, mate.
Yeah, thank you.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Take care, man.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Cantor. Any guest views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guests and not necessarily those of the hosts. Cantor strongly suggests listeners research local, state, and federal laws and regulations before conducting any cannabis-related activity.